another podcast provided by the CPA Technology Advisor at the intersection of technology and public accounting. Accounting Firm Security to Go is a monthly discussion with Executive Editor Greg LaFollette and Information Security Expert Dave Cieslak.
Good afternoon, or I guess good morning, depending on when you happen to be listening to the podcast. It is actually afternoon on Tuesday, the 22nd of January, in a cold day here in South Dakota. We are recording Accounting Firm Security to Go, Episode 3, with our regular guest, David Cieslak, from the warmer climes somewhere out in L.A. Good morning, or good afternoon. Good morning to you, David.
Good morning, Greg. And it's actually kind of cool here, but then again, I understand that's relative. It's in the mid-40s, and for some people that would be a spring day. For us, that definitely we're feeling the winter, as it were.
I won't tell you how many burlows we had this morning, so just leave that alone. This, you know, all of these temporal things, good morning, good afternoon, is really, really difficult when you're doing podcasting because we're doing it live on TalkShoe, and we have some guests listening in. So for them, it's now, which is afternoon for me in Central Time and morning for you in out in Pacific time, but other people listen to the podcast at different times, and it gets very confusing, so I think we should just deal with two times. We can have now and then.
Yeah. So I like that. That's a good way to frame that.
Okay. Well, for those of you who may be new to the CPA Technology Advisors Intersection Live series, this is a regularly monthly scheduled recurring podcast, Accounting Firm Security to Go. We do post detailed show notes, so as you're listening, if we do happen to mention a product or a service or a website, you can simply go to to our magazine's website, that's cpata.com or cpatechadvisor.com, and take a look at Intersection Live. It's prominent there, and you'll see the show notes, and you can click on there and see all the different things that that David's going to tell us about. If in the future you decide, for those of you who are listening to the podcast, if in the future you decide you'd like to join us, we record live on TalkShoe, and it's pretty simple. You can log on to TalkShoe and click a button, and you'll be listening to us, or you can also dial in and raise your hand and ask a question, and we'll put you on the line. Last month, we brought in an expert, and that was kind of fun, and it was an interesting way to do it. I kind of enjoyed that. David, what did you think?
Oh, I thought it was great. I appreciate the perspective, and definitely someone who's got so much significant time, you know, in the industry or you know, on that specific topic. It was great to get his perspective on spam and just you know, where we're at in that whole battle.
Well, I think you're picking up on my method here, David. I surround myself with people who are really, really bright, and that makes me look bright. So sometimes I have to go get two or three of them to, you know, to make that shine through. But it seems to work.
Well, I would tell you it's worked for many past presidents of the United States, so I'd say go with it.
Exactly. We better just leave that one alone.
I'm not going to touch that anyone more than I just did.
All right. Well, we also have some other ways to interact. If you have a question or a comment and you'd like to dial in and leave us a voicemail, we do have a voicemail box. Dial 800-456-0864, and the extension is 2106. So again, it's 800-456-0864. And that extension is 2106. We occasionally have people dial in, leave us some questions. We actually have a question today that we'll deal with a little bit later as we kind of look through all of these different thoughts and questions that various practitioners pose to us. And a couple of months ago, as we were recording, the concept of portals came up, and this all kind of flies around in this area of file exchange. When we first started on the internet, David, we you know, when we first emailed a QuickBooks file back and forth, we thought we were pretty clever, and that technology was pretty neat. We've come a long way in moving things. I'm not so sure we've come as far in terms of security. So we decided today we were going to talk a little bit about portals and file exchange and stuff, and maybe what I'd like to do is ask you to give me kind of your working definition. This word portal, I'm almost to the point where I don't like it because everybody knows exactly what a portal is, right?
Yeah.
But nobody has the same definition as anybody else.
Correct. So
let's define it. Let's try and surround this for all of these practitioners out there who are listening who think they know what a portal is. What do we think it is?
Well, I would, you know, it's a great question, and I think the way I would probably describe or define that is a portal is a place where people are ultimately able to collaborate or interact, you know, with other stakeholders and do that in electronic fashion.
So when I, for example, when I log on to the Wells Fargo website, I'm simply on their website. When I type in my username and my password, and all of a sudden I now see my data along with the Wells Fargo background, That's a portal because what I'm seeing is my stuff, and if you logged on and did the same thing, you'd see the same framework with your data.
Correct.
That's a portal, right?
Yep. So that's a perfect example of you know how you know your bank or any organization you want to work with, and that again, this could be customers, vendors, or employees, but it's a place where we're ultimately going to be able to interact with them. As well as collaborate with them. So, in the case of a bank, I mean, we're interacting with our bank, you know, able to touch base regarding our account balances, move dollars around, see if checks have cleared. But it gives them an opportunity.
Bills.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
To electronically interface with you.
Okay. So, now for an accounting firm, I mean, a portal again can be, if I have that portal, and let's go back to the Wells Fargo thing, if I have that portal, for me, it may be that all I have there is my checking account.
Mm-hmm.
For you, you may have a checking account and an investment account,
mm-hmm.
Stocks. You may have, next guy might have a savings account and a bill pay account, or a credit card, or a mortgage, or all of those things. So it's not the same for, well, I suppose it would be the same for two people, but because there's not that many choices, but it's very different for every single person.
Correct.
So for an accounting firm, the opportunities here are what, David? How do you see that working?
Well, I think we're all looking for better ways to just interact with our own clients, and so we'll leave the whole notion of maybe employees and vendors aside for now. But we're all looking for a better way to interact with our clients, and you know to really as we look at portals, one of the neat things about them is they really have kind of a 24/7 aspect to them. So we're able to log on and look at bank balances or interact with another organization, really 24/7. So whether it's in our pajamas or in the middle of the day, we're able to, have that kind of we're always here, we're always ready to interact with you kind of presence then.
Okay, so If I'm, right now I'm beginning to grind out taxes. I'm sitting here in an accounting firm, and so are you, and there are people scurrying around out there starting to do tax returns.
Uh-huh.
And if I have a very simple question for a tax client, I'm going to say, what was the purchase date of that GM stock that
uh-huh.
you sold?
Uh-huh.
I really don't have very much of a problem putting that in an email.
Correct.
Knowing
yes.
that somebody might read that, You know, and he's going to send back and say it was 1987 or whatever. And he's probably comfortable sending that in an email. At some point, though, we're going to start exchanging information that's more sensitive.
Correct.
And right now, a lot of practitioners are kind of caught up in what do I do with that? And I think there's a spot where portals and email security and encryption and all of that stuff kind of gets blurry. How do you see? Well, there's a couple of things that go into a portal. One of them is what I would call file exchange.
Mm-hmm.
That could be anything. A file could be as simple as an email that says, oh, by the way, that stock I sold, I inherited from my father, and it had a basis of this, or you know, whatever it is that he didn't want to put in an email. If he puts it in some sort of, how would that work in a portal?
Well, normally in a portal, what you're going to have is some ability to, you know, leave a message, as it were, or you know, still do some level of, you know, correspondence back and forth. But you know, by design, you know, if we're leaving those kinds of notes, you know, or those kinds of, you know, let me give you this piece of information, let me update you on that kind of thing. The whole notion regarding portals is they're meant to be a, not just a place to interact and collaborate, but to do that in a secure way. So that is truly, you know, a fundamental part of what these portals are all about.
So walk back through the difference now. If I send an email, and that's all I do, I just send an email, that is insecure because why? Why is that not secure?
Great question. And, you know, it's interesting. Back when email was originally conceived, there really wasn't, because it was all on a secure network to start, you know, the whole ARPANET project and so forth. And then as we look at it in its earliest beginnings, it was on a secure network to begin with. So the requirement to, you know, individually you know, secure the messages themselves was not even a requirement. So we look at that and say, but, you know, wow, we've moved well beyond that into something that truly is, you know, global and, you know, largely public, we'll even say. You know, in other words, you know, people with a set of ears on electronically can, you know, potentially listen in on things. And so we're going back to the fact that, you know, these email products, these email, you know, the protocols themselves are, you know, for the most part, clear text and something that folks can potentially, you know, listen in on and or at least be able to, you know, see it as it goes passing, you know, by on, you know, in the ether, as it were. So I always tell folks, look, you know, email is great for the non-confidential, you know, exchange or the non-confidential, really just kind of going back and correspondence back and forth. But as soon as you've got something confidential to say, we now need to kind of be operating under a different set of rules and a different set of just awareness of wait a minute, that's not something I'd want, you know, the outside world to know or see or to potentially listen in on. And I know you've heard me say it, you know, many times in the past, and, you know, and I always, I guess this is turning into kind of one of my favorite little personal sayings is, you know, so often we think about convenience first and security second, and this is a perfect example of when people are, you know, wanting to exchange information back and forth, maybe with a customer, they're thinking about, well, gosh, it would be just so simple to just drop them an email note and ask them for the bank account number and balance and social security information. But, you know, that's you know, fraught with exposure. So really, we need to be thinking about, wait a minute, this is sensitive, confidential information. And by design, we know, by definition, we know that email is not secure.
So email is, although very, very convenient, it's kind of like when I go off on vacation and I pick up a little postcard and I write on the back of it, you know, having fun, wish you were here.
Yep, perfect metaphor.
Drop it in the mail. Chances of somebody actually reading it are probably fairly low. I mean, they're busy and, you know, and you know, it's going to kind of float through the system, and probably nobody's going to read it because, it's not very interesting anyway. But I wouldn't write very important stuff on there. If it was something that was more private, I'd put it in an envelope and seal it.
Correct.
And if
absolutely
it were,
correct.
If it were very important and very secure, I might want to put it in an envelope and send it certified or special delivery or
mm-hmm.
by
yep.
FedEx or something else.
Perfect
does
metaphor.
Does that kind of
yeah.
work?
Yeah, that's an absolutely terrific metaphor. It really is.
Okay, so let's then talk about I'm here in my practice and I need to communicate with a client about something that I've determined now is to some level private. And we've got, I think, a whole bunch of things here controlling this. We have responsibilities in tax practice. We have all the ethics ruling over on you
mm-hmm.
know, your CPA on the institute side. We have a lot of state requirements. I know, Dave, you live in the land of state regulation. the Cal Board of Accountancy has got a whole bunch of rules on what I can and can't do. I got to communicate with my clients. What can I do?
Well, yeah, you're right. There, you know, that you're right. We do come in Southern California. In California in general, they love to make this, make up the new laws. They like to be the trendsetters. But you know, really, what I tell folks is, say, look, you know, we have to come up with the right solution, you know, based upon what it is we wanna exchange back and forth. And in the case of email, I would tell you that, you know, that's something that can be made secure, but virtually no one takes the steps to make it secure. And again, I think, you know, most folks start off with this convenience mindset. We go back and forth, and now as we're hearing more in the papers, seeing more on the evening news of this stuff getting compromised, we're looking at it saying, whoa, wait a minute, let me hit the pause button here for a second. Maybe I need to rethink some of how this information goes back and forth. And so we start now saying, let's evaluate our different options here. And I know we started off talking about portals, and portals seem to be just a very common sense place to land in terms of exchanging that kind of information. When there's something confidential that needs to go back and forth, and email is not the right medium for doing that. And so I always tell folks, it's not that email can't be secure, but it's virtually none of us will take the steps or go through the process to make it secure. So it's probably just a better rule to say, don't ever have a private conversation, a secure conversation, anything confidential that you push through email.
Okay, so then we switch over now and talk a little bit about portals. And David, in a past life, in the spirit of full disclosure, in past life, I am a retired Thompson exec, and when I was with Thompson, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, one of the teams that I was leading kind of began to fashion what became some of the first portals offered to the profession. And Thompson's been in this portal business since then, and I've kind of referred to them when I've been writing as kind of the grandpappy of portals, and they've built a system where accounting firms can actually quite easily spawn a portal, and
mm-hmm.
the Thompson data center in the background does all the security and things, and
mm-hmm.
you know, they've got some like 2,500 firms doing it, and they've set up like 150,000 different client portals. So there's a lot of firms out there doing that and, you know, using it. Over on the Thompson side, they've now got a whole menu of things. I'll build a portal and then I'll put in these different things like, you know, file exchange and document presentment and, you
mm-hmm.
know, some different programs and all sorts of different things that a client might do. Kind of back like to the Wells Fargo thing. You got a checking account and a savings account and all those different things, depending on what the client happens to want. Accountants world, serves a whole bunch of practitioners, a lot of smaller practitioners who really need a lot of like technology help in the background. They've got several thousand firms and tens of thousands of client portals. So, I mean, accountants are doing this, but I still hear people ask, what is it and how do I do it in my firm? Mm-hmm. So if I'm practicing and I call you and say, David, I think I want portals. I've heard the call. What do I do? What do you tell them?
Well, and whether it's Thompson or, just a number of other, hosted services, basically what they're doing is saying, look, we understand that you could probably set some of this stuff up yourself and really configure it to operate within your own organization. But really, what we've got is a number of organizations now saying, we're going to step into the fold and we're actually going to help you help you do that. What they're really doing is saying, look, we'll take care of all the plumbing, we'll take care of all the underlying, setting up the secure servers with digital certificates and all of the, the technology that goes into setting up that secure place. And then really what we're doing is we're giving you an easy method to really interface then with that secure portal location. And so they'll give you the ability to say, incorporate it as a landing page or as a tab off of your website, or when you send a piece of email and you want to, transmit a confidential document as well, rather than putting the document in the email, you end up putting it up on the portal, and then what goes with the message itself is just a reference to where and how you can log on to that secure location then and grab the attachment that goes with the message. And so again, that's really kind of the state of where a lot of these products, these services, these vendors are at right now, is saying, look, we understand it's complex. We're going to help make it simple for you. And the way we're going to do that is we're going to really just make it something that just for a monthly fee, you can get yourself configured for that. And it really just slides right into, what you're doing and how you're doing it.
So if I happen to be a firm that uses, say, for example, I'm a pro system shop. I use CCH's pro system FX office, and I use tax and document and engagement and all of those products, and thousands of firms do, and it's darn good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that they offer is a portal spawner thing that does kind of, as I understand, kind of what you were saying, like with the email, or if I want to give them a copy of their tax return, it's pretty auto magic. Now I could do that. In fact, I've had this conversation with firms and they say, well, we do secure file exchange and we do it with Microsoft Groove or with Mango Mind or with Jungle Disk, and those are secure ways to do it, aren't they?
They are, but they, I think what happens is for the most part, some of those are just, have a very much a one-off kind of a feeling to them. If I want to just, throw one file your way, I can go up to senduit.com or something like that and kind of take that approach. But really, as we kind of, think through, is that really, kind of the strategy or the structure and foundation we want to, really kind of, present to all of our clients? That's the outward facing view of it. And the answer is no. I think there's something that's going to feel a lot more integrated to, what we're doing, how we're doing it, and going to make it feel like it's even something that we're doing and it's something we're hosting up.
Right. So, many of those companies are in the background saying, my job is to make you look smart in the eyes of your clients. And the vendors who do that get rewarded, right?
I'm sorry, I missed the question in that, though.
Okay, well, when vendors figure out a way to make their customers, the practicing accountants, look smart or sophisticated in the eyes of their clients, those people get rewarded. I mean, accountants go to them and say, yeah, I want to buy more of that.
Yeah, no, clearly that's a, I mean, it really can be, you know, a very great way to leverage some neat technology out there and really, you know, plug that in at a place that makes great sense for the organization.
Right. So one of the ways to get portalized and to start spawning portals, and I really appreciated the way you described those one-off things. They work really well, but I can't imagine trying to manage portals for 100 or 200 or 300 clients with that sort of a system.
Correct. And that's, you know, again, that's what I'm saying, you know, as you look at some of those products, they very much are meant for the ad hoc, one file, here you go, never to be done again kind of thing. And it really isn't going to present to the customer like this as a, you know, a durable, recurring place where they're going to do ongoing business with you. So, you know, and that really is part of, you know, the portal experience is really branding it, giving it, you know, the sense that it's part of, you know, you, ABC Accountancy Firm. And that is part of the, you know, part of the benefit of actually doing something like that. That's going to be, you know, have a lot more refined and a lot more professional feeling.
So the one of the real benefits that I usually see with portals is you know, coming up fairly soon here. As soon as we get done with tax season, people begin to call and say, I lost my copy or I need another copy of my tax return.
Mm-hmm.
Can you get it for me? Now, when that happens, you say to your admin person, you know, get a copy of, you know, Johnson's tax return and mail it to him. And then, you know, you try and figure out how you're going to bill for that. The fact is that you can't.
Mm-hmm.
Or usually you can't. How would that work in a portal?
Well, in a portal, you know, chances are what you're able to do is, you know, you may very well be sharing a copy of the completed return, you know, with them via, you know, the portal, you know, maybe a review copy and then ultimately the final. But, you know, from there, you know, maybe it's something that, you know, just a copy of it resides there, and it's something that much like, you know, getting a copy of your past bank statement when you log into your banking website, you know, I need to see my statement from September or something, you know, in a much the same way. You can say, can I get, you know, can I re-download a copy of my 2006 or 2007 tax return, and a copy of it's retained there, and it's secure, it's confidential, it's, you know, it's not like you need to worry about somebody hacking into that and grabbing your return, but it acts as a nice filing cabinet then too for you.
So do you see somewhere down the line, or maybe have you seen advanced firms doing this already, saying, okay, we've now finished your tax return, we provide an electronic copy of the tax return to the IRS, we provide, through our e-filing, we provide an electronic copy of the return to the state taxing authority, via e-filing, we provide a copy, an electronic copy of the tax return to us to keep here in our office through our document management system, and ultimately then we provide an electronic copy to you, Mr. Client, that's available in our portal, and that's just the way returns are delivered.
Yep, and that makes terrific sense.
Yeah.
We can start moving away from the pounds of paper and the paper folios and everything else that we've kind of, you know, maybe the more traditional model, and move towards something that really is, you know, even quite honestly, what the customers are looking for. They want the ability to just grab a copy. I mean, anymore, and not just because I work with technology, but I think a lot of people are looking at it saying, you know what, if we don't need to kill a lot of trees or to, you know, have the delay of the, you know, the U.S. mail, then let's go ahead and just do this electronically, and let's just be done and move on.
Do you, I know, David, you're a technology guy, and I'm sure that you're looking wistfully at some of the incredible advances that Microsoft has made in SharePoint. Do you see possibilities for firms to actually do their own using SharePoint? Is that, I hear firms talking about that.
Well, it's a possibility, clearly. But, you know, for a lot of folks, they're going to look at that and say, wow, that just seems like a lot more work than I'm going to want to necessarily put in. There's just a lot of setup involved. Let's just put it that way. And so what we're doing is we're looking at it and saying these hosted services seem to make a lot of sense to the extent that that you know, you're you know, a smaller shop, you're looking for something that's pretty quick. You know, you can pretty much just drop it in place and get going. You know, for larger organizations, you know, SharePoint is definitely a possibility. But I think the place where we're seeing SharePoint more and more is really just, you know, collaboration amongst employees. So internally we're seeing that. And, you know, probably seeing it more there than necessarily, you know, customer facing just yet.
Sure. So you know, again, that kind of goes back to, yeah, it's possible, but it's just plain not practicable.
Yeah, and I just would say it's not, I don't know that I feel that it's quite as ready for prime time. I feel like there's just a lot of extra, you know, elbow grease you're going to need to put into that one to make that, you know, really something that's even, you know, on par with some of these other hosted services that are already out there. And for a reasonable price, by the way.
Yeah, our friend Randy Johnson refers to that as hobbyist technologist. And, you know, it is fun. I mean, you know, SharePoint's fun. There's, there's some interesting things too, as are many of these other things. When you first set them up, you go, wow, that's really neat. But it's kind of maybe like, you know, trying to do a tax return in Excel. It's possible, but it just plain doesn't make a lot of sense.
Correct. So, good way to put it.
Bottom line, as people want to look at security, they ought to be first looking at probably their suite. Their, you know, if they happen to be a Thompson shop or a CCH shop or now Intuit really isn't in the portal business at this point, but a lot of the document management systems, the dockets and the Act Firsts and the you know, the interwoven, some of those standalone, what I refer to as standalone document management systems, they all have portal just kind of built in as a part of what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And do you see a lot of firms doing it that way, or what kind of where do you see firms doing it?
Well, I see firms that, you know, to the extent that there's already products available that are, you know, integrated or dovetailed in with, you know, the tax prep programs they're using, then, yeah, they're looking at that and saying that makes good sense because the integration's already there. And, you know, it really is kind of the not only the path of least resistance, but they've, you know, that integration is actually very, you know, is usually well thought out and very helpful. So I would say that seems to be, you know, kind of the, I don't want to call it necessarily a no-brainer, but that sure seems to make good sense, you know, is a great way to kind of get yourself into it. And for, let's face it, for a lot of practitioners, especially those whose practices are predominantly tax preparation, that is absolutely, you know, a very, you know, common sense or very intuitive way to approach it.
Well, I do know that the major tax compliance products, the ProFXs, the UltraTax, the LeCertes, those have all built a system where you can automagically create a portal for every tax client as the tax return is completed. And those are actually fairly cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them sell a license, you know, for example, it's like $1,200 a year or something, and we'll provide a portal for every tax return you do, and we'll put them up for, I don't know, whatever it is, 7 years or whatever, and we'll maintain it, and we do all of the folder, all you just put a link on your tax return.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's a real no-brainer. You know, it's just a way, all it's used for is to deliver a tax return.
Yeah, and that's, again, I think there's just, it makes good sense. It's a logical, you know, jumping in point. And you know, it's and especially in light of some of the integration, that just it's a great way for firms to get started. And gosh, it's sure better than you know, kind of continuing on going the email route or these other insecure routes, to be certain. And now, interestingly, you mentioned just you know, we're kind of focusing on some of the products that are out there that are, you know, maybe dovetailed or currently integrated with and coming directly from, you know, the tax prep vendors. But it doesn't take much of a Google search to just uncover really a whole host of products that are out there trying to do the same exact thing, and, you know, really for, like I said, you know, very reasonable pricing models. And depending on the kinds of documents you need to exchange, the, you know, the number of people that are going to want to move, you know, documents back and forth. So in other words, how many customers are we talking about? How many staff people maybe are we talking about? How many documents? How many megs or gigs? You know, there's different approaches, different pricing models. But, you know, generally speaking, what we're going to find is that we've got products that are, you know, can be, you know, as little as, you know, $5, $10, you know, a month per user kind of thing. You know, potentially, you know, with unlimited customers kind of thing. So again, it's just, there's a real kind of a spread across the board in terms of how these things are priced out. But ultimately, every one of these has kind of the same, you know, kind of marching orders in mind. We want to, you know, help you secure your email. We want to do it in a way that your customers can log on. It feels like a, you know, it's still part of ABC Accountancy Corporation. It's a very integrated, very, you know, feels like you never left the ABC accounting, you know, firm website. And it just, all they perceive is it's, you know, wow, my CPA has really stepped it up. They've taken it to the next level, and now we're able to kind of, you know, move those files back and forth. I'm able to, you know, pick up a copy of my return just like I interface with the bank. And, you know, that's the kind of CPA I want to do business with.
So it kind of sounds to me, David, listening through all of that, that probably after tax season, we don't want to tell anybody to do anything before tax season.
Sure enough.
After tax season, the CSLAC command would be go forth, talk to your vendors of the products that you're already using, your tax compliance or your document management product, and say, tell me about your portals, and if that will fit for you, do it. And if, you know, if you want to go shopping, you can, but be careful about getting too far from home. Do I kind of summarize that right?
Probably a terrific way to present, you know, just to say that, yes.
Okay. Let me change topics here on you, David.
Okay.
We have a listener who actually sent me an email. A guy by the name of, a practitioner by the name of Bob Waldrop sends in a note, and it actually came as part of reading the November issue of the CPA Technology Advisor. And he says, he says, great article on Excel hints, by the way. We gotta throw that in.
Good,
and,
yeah.
He says, but what really tweaked my interest was your sidebar comment about wireless and encryption. And then goes on to his real question. He said, I've heard fourth or fifth hand, some states, including Colorado, he's obviously from Colorado, have or will soon implement statutes requiring encryption of emails transmitting any, quote, financial information. I would certainly appreciate your thoughts on this topic. Most importantly, can you refer me to some guidance on how to set up simplified email encryption for a small two-person firm? Now, we just spent half an hour better talking about why email encryption probably wasn't the answer, and portals are the answer, but we got to understand that not everyone is going to follow that. I mean, for some, they're going to say, you know, I don't need portals. I just need to exchange emails occasionally, and I want them to be encrypted.
Mm-hmm.
What do they do? What's your advice?
Well, there are, you know, much like there are portal services out there, there are also services as well that are, you know, really trying to, you know, jump in and fill that need as well and saying, we can help you you know, exchange email, you know, in a confidential way. So, and now, interestingly enough, as we talk about confidential email, I mean, you know, really, we got to figure out, you know, what part of the equation are we looking to secure? Are we looking to secure it from end to end, meaning user mailbox to user mailbox? Are we looking to secure just pieces of that, you know, just, you know, portions of the trip along the way? And I would think most people would say, no, I'd pretty much, that makes sense. I'd want it end to end. And so then, you know, what we've got is organizations saying, great, if we want that end-to-end security, then we're looking at either doing something to encrypt, you know, or secure the message itself, or to, much like the way portals operate, kind of take that attachment or take that confidential information, somehow or another encrypt or encapsulate that, and put that in a safe place, and really just use email as kind of a notifier to say, you've got mail. You've got actually confidential mail at the other end. And then from there, they're going to need, you know, some kind of login information that ultimately then will, you know, not only let them gain access to that document, but it will allow them to unencrypt it then as well. So in other words, break it back open, you know, decipher it and make it readable to them and to them alone. So really what we're trying to do is, you know, secure the journey, you know, of the document from, you know, one user's mailbox to the other. And again, there are products. We can do digital certificates against our email accounts, and that's something I've been doing for years. And at some point, you know, and I think all the while, I think all of us would have hoped that that would have caught on to some degree. But I think what happens is because there's been, you know, such, not, and I won't even call it slow adoption, I'll even call it, go so far as to call it virtual no adoption of that, along with just really just kind of a lack of understanding of some of how all that needs to kind of be, you know, assembled and pulled together and you know, really kind of rolled out.
Certificate, David, really, I mean, you and I talked about this years ago, and I tried to use a digital certificate, and I did for a couple of years, and you and I visited about this. I finally had to turn it off and quit using it because so many people were using email clients that were so old that they couldn't read my email at all.
Or, you know, we're up with, that's a good point. And then the other thing we're finding, too, is that some people are, you know, their spam filters are saying, I don't recognize that public key that's attached to Greg's email messages that's coming into Dave's email box as I am the recipient.
Definitely.
They're looking at that going, wow, I don't recognize what that is. That must be bad stuff, and I'm just going to filter everything out, the message included. And so it's like, well, boy, that's sure counterproductive. That's not going the direction we're trying to go at all.
So, but you know, back to this practitioner who wants some sort of answer. Do you know any suggestion on a pure product? You know, who would you send him to?
You know, and I did have an opportunity to do, you know, a little bit of research on this one, you know, prior to getting together for, you know, our call today. And, you know, kind of what I, you know, found or learned as I was kind of stepping my way through that was that, you know, really there are, you know, kind of two different approaches, you know, one of the products, you know, PKware, you know, the company that does like PKZip, they've got the ability to kind of wrap up that whole message and the attachment and try to and deliver that into, you know, some kind of you know, encrypted fashion, and that's something that people are comfortable or familiar with.
That's just you type the message and then zip it up kind of with a password and then send. Your email really isn't encrypted. It's the file that's
correct.
That's encrypted.
Correct.
Okay.
But then what you're finding is other products, and you know, one of the products in particular we talked about last call was a company called Postini, and you know, they are looking at it and saying, look, we are already pretty significantly, you know, a part of the whole, you know, spam filtering or email, you know, transport equation. We could also act as a resource as well for our customer base and really give you that secure email, because again, what you're doing then is at that point you're really kind of pushing the email through them, so you're making a secure connection to them, and they're in turn making sure that that, you know, is only accessed in a secure fashion by the user at the other end. So they you know, that this whole notion of having an intermediary, you know, seems to be just a very timely or a very, you know, common sense kind of approach, given that most folks, you know, it seems like the window is opened and closed, you know, for us to, you know, kind of take charge of this ourselves and everybody get a digital certificate and encrypt our own messages and so forth. It seems like that window of opportunity just has moved on. So again, I look at a product like Postini, you know, those products that are actually, you know, where you're connecting to them in a secure fashion, before then turning around and they will then make certain that it gets delivered back to the user at the other end in a secure way.
Sure. So and Postini's probably going to be around for a while. Their parent company is that one company that people have been talking about all the time. Who is that?
Begins with a G.
Oh, that's you could Google that, right?
Yes, that would be a Google company now. And, yeah, Google was pretty impressed with their technology, and so impressed they said, you know, this is terrific stuff. And it's not to say they're the only ones out there. You know, again, we know there's other, you know, similar kinds of products. But, you know, Postini really has done a pretty sharp job of understanding the animal and coming up with a pretty smart approach to, you know, how they just are trying to protect, you know, every one of our email inboxes, and in this case, our email outboxes as well.
Right. Well, that's those are a couple of ways. One of our listeners sent me an email in that says you can also use a product called Relax.com, and that's RELAKKS.com. And I've heard of this company as an anonymous surfing kind of a thing, David. I don't know exactly how this would work in terms of email encryption, but my guess is they offer something in that area, or our listener wouldn't have sent it in. So that might be. We'll put that in the show notes, and you have to go over and you know, what you see is what you get. We're not endorsing it; just kind of telling you that might be another solution. So,
yeah, and basically what you're doing, I think, with a product like that, is you're making a secure connection to a host somewhere, and then from there, you know, your stuff is, you know, pushed on from there. So yeah, I'd have to probably kind of think my way through that a little bit more too, to kind of understand, you know, how they're trying to approach it and how that might be different than others. But you know, it still fundamentally comes down to the same thing, and that is, we need to, you know, we're really just trying to secure the pipeline, you know, between, you know, ourselves and at least, you know, the email post office, you know, on the other end. And then from there, you know, I think a better solution still is to secure it all the way to the end user's mailbox. And that's where you kind of these store, and I'll call them store and forward, but it's really store and access kind of solutions, you know, probably come into play.
Sure. Okay. Well, David, we're pretty much right at our time. I promise to not burn up too much of your morning and make sure you still have time to go have lunch. So I want to make sure that we do that. We're scheduled to record AFS to go, Accounting Firm Security to go, episode 4 in February on February 20th. That's Wednesday, February 20th at 11 a.m. Central Time. And have you decided at this point, David, what you would like to attack next month, or is that going to be a secret?
I think we're going to make that one a surprise. I know there's certain hot topics, and you know, as we kind of talked about originally, it's quite a list to choose from. But let's just see, you know, kind of the way some of the things continue to play out here now in the early weeks of tax season. Let's pick something that you know, truly is you know, gonna you know, be very much in step with you know, those concerns.
Well, I doubt that that will run out of material.
I'm not concerned.
This whole issue now, again, made uh, made number one on the AICPA's top texts, which you again so ably chaired this year. And there's a whole batch of them that were in that list of 10 that kind of fall in things we'll be talking about, but that that security and privacy and those sorts of things were certainly front and center there, right?
Correct. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Well, David, again, thank you so much for your time and your expertise and all that you do for the profession. We at the CPA Technology Advisor certainly appreciate it, and we appreciate your willingness to share your knowledge and expertise with our readers turned listeners. So, Episode 3 of Accounting Firm Security to Go is concluded. We'll look forward to seeing all of you next month on Wednesday, the 20th of February. And with that, we're done. David, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Greg.
That wraps up this edition of Accounting Firm Security to Go. Join Greg and Dave again next month for more insight and advice
this
on
has
security
been a podcast
issues
provided by the CPA Technology Advisor at the intersection of technology and public accounting.